Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson, and for the next hour, I'll be featuring the music and history of a legendary jazz orchestra that served in one of the greatest causes the world has ever known, led by a bandleader who vanished at the height of his popularity. We'll also hear excerpts from an archival interview that I did with Nat Peck, a former member of the orchestra, as well as historian Michael McGurr. It's Sustain the Wings. Major Glenn Miller goes to war with the Army Air Force Band, coming up on this edition of Nightlights.
But we were still dancing, which goes to show that music has charms. The lights were low, so we kept on dancing. I felt the glow of you in my arms. The band had left the stand, we were in heaven, dancing on a cloud way off in the blue. The music stopped, and people were glancing, but we went on dancing, for we didn't know, because stopped, we went on dancing, we didn't know. We were in love.
Johnny Desmond with Glenn Miller's Army Air Force Band performing The Music Stopped in the spring of 1944, and the Army Air Force Band before that doing Jerry Gray's Enlisted Men's Mess, both from the Set the Secret broadcast. July 24, 1942, 8 months after America's entry into World War II, and Glenn Miller was broadcasting his last Chesterfield radio program. The 38-year-old bandleader had enlisted and was now a captain in the Army.
Goodman and Kaiser and Miller helped to make things right.
Mixing hot links with vanilla, jukebox Saturday night.
In 1942, the Glenn Miller Orchestra was one of the most popular, best-selling big bands in America, with songs such as In the Mood, Moonlight Serenade, and Pennsylvania 65,000 becoming jukebox staples, and Chattanooga Choo Choo the first million-selling record. The Miller Band had appeared in two movies and was slated for more. At 38, Glenn Miller was under no obligation to serve in the armed forces, but he chose to break up his popular civilian orchestra and join the war effort, hoping to contribute in the way he knew best, directing a musical unit.
That was Jukebox Saturday Night, and that lad that imitated Harry James really did a job. The reason? Because it was Harry James himself. Harry, come on over here and say something.
Well, hello, everybody.
Harry, naturally, we're very reluctant to give up our Moonlight Serenade. But since I got a date with Uncle Sam coming up, I can sincerely say I'd rather have you take over our regular Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday spot than anyone I know. So, next Tuesday, get to work, mister.
Well, Captain Miller, coming from you, that's an order. But seriously, Glenn, I'm sure everyone agrees with me that you're doing a mighty fine thing in joining the Army.
Thank you very much, Harry. That's well. You know, folks, it makes me feel a little sad to leave Marion, Tex, Skip, the Modern Airs, this wonderful gang of boys in the band, and all our friends listening. But there's a lot of swell guys in the outfit I'm going in, and maybe all of us can get together again after this thing is over. In the meantime, I'll see you all in the Army, and we'll say goodbye in the best way we know how.
After some uncertain bouncing around in the military, Miller landed at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, where he began to put together what would come to be known as the Army Air Force Band. It started out as a 40-piece orchestra and would eventually encompass a big band unit, an easy-listening strings ensemble, a modern jazz small group, a vocal group, and a pianist-singer duo. One of Miller's first orders of business was to jazz up the John Philip Sousa marches and other old warhorses of the military marching band. When one officer complained to Miller that the marches from World War I still sounded just fine to him, Miller retorted, "Tell me, Major, are you flying the same planes you flew in the last war?" Brent Wallerab and Janis Stockhouse and one of the most significant salvos in Miller's mission to revitalize military marching band music, his treatment of W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues.
He picked those tempos, those standard march tempos that the military bands march to and drill to, and kind of layered in these really nice swinging big band arrangements over top of it. It worked great, and the morale was great, you know, for the musicians. Of course, he did suffer, you know, from that criticism. But really, so much of jazz, the march influence is one of the early influences of jazz in the first place. And when you listen to a lot of jazz, pretty much up until 1930, in a way, you hear a lot of these march kind of components as far as the form of the tune. So it's really not that much of a stretch to go back to the marches. I think St. Louis Blues March is one great example where it can be just really swinging, but it really has that rhythm underneath it. And one way they did it was they had the marching band out there playing these arrangements and have a drum set that have like a big piece of plywood strapped to the back of the Jeep, and they'd bolt a drum set down and tie the drummer under the little stool, and he'd be back there playing a drum set on a Jeep that's following along with the marching band instead of having the standard bass drum and cymbals.
The cadence, the drum cadence, jup, 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 jup. Boy, I just see like I see the army, a slick, modern, hip army of Yanks coming over across the pond. It's almost glamorizing the men who went overseas to fight.
This was the orchestra that 18-year-old trombonist Nat Peck heard when he arrived in New Haven in 1943 to report for duty as a member of Glenn Miller's ensemble. He was walking in the direction of the University Green when he heard the band out for its daily morning parade.
When I first heard the band, it was overwhelming. Tremendous, tremendous. I never expected anything like that from a military band.
For Glenn Miller, the war had provided a unique musical opportunity. He could assemble the biggest, best band in the armed forces without concern for cost. Historian Michael McGurr.
He got musicians in the war that he'd not gotten before, even on top. The rap on Miller's band, even when it was riding high in 41, 42, was that its rhythm section wasn't particularly good. And his Air Force band gets this great rhythm section with Trigger Alpert, Mel Powell playing piano. So the war gives Glenn Miller an opportunity he really didn't have, despite all of his fame, success, and leverage.
Because of his stature, Miller also had license to pull any outstanding jazz musicians who were already serving elsewhere into his orchestra. Though some initially chafed at the idea of working for Glenn Miller, for most it was a happy event. Nat Peck was one such musician. He actually wrote a letter to Miller asking to be put into his unit.
Oh, I was easy. I was easy, but he did have some pretty good people, like Mel, like Ray McKinley, like Peanut Sacco, like Bernie Priven, and so on. So nobody would say no to a Glenn Miller offer, in the Army, that is. And so he was able to assemble a top-notch orchestra. Really, you couldn't ever do better in civilian days than he did in the Army.
It was like a kid in a candy store when he was given this opportunity. He could handpick the best musicians and bring them in. And, of course, he would expand it with a string section. And he was also able to handpick his arranging staff. I mean, I kind of like to think, in a way, who knows, he may have really saved some lives of some really great musicians by bringing them in from various theaters and saying, you're in my band now.
Something new, Sergeant Johnny Desmond, the crew chief, singing Moon Dreams.
Moon dreams, dancing on my pillow. Moon dreams,
recall a night of paradise with you out of the blue. The silver waves were rolling,
and in the distance a tango started, floating like a feather, gay and summer-hearted. We never once questioned whether
our night of love together would ever die. Mountains,
waves rolling,
I see them when the moonbeams shine.
Once again in moon dreams you are mine.
Mm-hmm. the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band playing Ralph Wilkinson's arrangement of Chummy McGregor and Johnny Mercer's Moon Dreams, which would be recorded just a few years later by Miles Davis's Birth of the Cool Band, Johnny Desmond and the Crew Chiefs on vocals. The Miller Military Band could swing, too, as evidenced by this Jerry Gray composition and arrangement, Jeep Jockey Jump. Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band doing Jeep Jockey Jump. The recordings of the Miller Army Air Force Band that were made stateside were broadcast on a national radio show called I Sustain the Wings. The band's arrangers put together an impressive book incorporating Miller's civilian band standards and new material that included popular songs of the moment. The orchestra worked hard, rehearsing constantly, as Nat Peck recalls.
The way those rehearsals were conducted, it was like a religious ceremony. That is, it was done with so much intelligence and respect for the music, and it revealed that Miller was an absolute fantastic musician because he was able to virtually transform an arrangement by Jerry Gray or Al Laden or Ralph Wilkinson by just adding a few touches here and there, and suddenly that arrangement became fantastic.
Thank you.
There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. There's a bright golden haze on the meadow.
The corn is as high as an elephant's eye,
and it looks like it's climbing clear up to the sky. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way. Everything's going my way.
Band doing Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein's Oh, What a Beautiful Morning from the hit 1943 musical Oklahoma. Michael McGurr on the Miller Military Band's diverse approach to its songbook.
He was very astute at reaching a whole range of audiences and making them all comfortable enough to stay with it. Really think of it as a kind of musical variety show that's closer to that, to the kind of reviews that, say, a black ragtime band like James Reese Europe would do.
Brent Wallerab also cites James Reese Europe as a precedent for Miller's AAF orchestra.
In World War I, there was Lieutenant James Reese Europe and his 369th Hellfighters band, where they took blues and ragtime and jazz tunes and some popular kind of southern-type dances and orchestrated them out for military band.
And Michael McGurr says Miller's AAF had yet another precedent.
Paul Whiteman was a white musician who was brilliant at incorporating the new music of jazz and fitting it into a much more elaborate structure that included varieties of straight popular music, ballad singing, the fun of Bing Crosby and the Rhythm Boys, and something also more orchestral, something fitting for Carnegie Hall, somebody who would premiere Gershwin. And Glenn Miller was a young musician when Paul Whiteman had that kind of fame. And it's interesting to see how clearly his career tracks Whiteman.
The Miller Army Air Force Band could do it all, but there was one thing they hadn't done yet that Glenn Miller desperately wanted: to go overseas and perform for the troops in the European Theater of Operations. On June 10, 1944, the Miller Band broadcast from Chicago. Several days before, the Allies had launched the D-Day invasion.
I sustain the wing. The Army Air Forces present the Band of the Training Command under the direction of Captain Glenn Miller. Now, Captain Glenn Miller.
Thank you, Lieutenant Don Briggs, and good evening, everybody. It's been a big week for our side. Over on the beaches of Normandy, our boys have fired the opening guns of the long-awaited drive to liberate the world. And over here, the folks who are backing up those boys are staging another big push of their own, the Fifth War Loan Drive. To lend a hand with the band, we're swinging around the countryside ourselves to do what we can to keep those invasion dollars moving over to the fighting front where they're needed, in the shape of guns, tanks, and planes. And tonight, we're at the Servicemen's Center here in Chicago, where already over 12 million servicemen and women have been guests of the city of Chicago. Now, to get to a little music, here are the boys with their rocket gun version of Flying Home.
What Miller didn't tell his enthusiastic audience was this: the band was leaving for England, the result of a sustained campaign by Miller, who felt it imperative for the orchestra to be able to entertain troops who were seeing action or close to the front. The only possible hint his listeners could have had came from his sign-off at the end of the show.
This is Captain Glenn Miller saying so long for all our gang. Next week, I Sustain the Wings will be brought to you by another band of the training command of the Army Air Forces, with Captain Bob Jennings, the CO, and the music under the direction of Sergeant Harry Bluestone.
We've enjoyed playing for you, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to us.
Glenn Miller signing off from a Chicago broadcast on June 10th, 1944, shortly before the Army Air Force Band headed overseas to England. I'll have more of the music of the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band and my conversations with band member Nat Peck and historian Michael McGurr in just a few moments. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, offering new and used music LPs, CDs, DVDs, and turntables. And from the Laughing Planet Cafe, online at thelaughingplanetcafe.com. I'm David Bren Johnson, and you're listening to Glenn Miller Goes to War with the Army Air Force Band on Nightlights. On June 22, 1944, the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band departed for England on the Queen Elizabeth liner. Nat Peck remembers that there were thousands of troops on the boat, which made even a simple task like eating lunch almost impossible.
I lived on Hershey Bars for the whole crossing. I mean, the reason for that was the queues were monumentally long. You get on a queue for lunch, for example, and you'd have to get on the queue about 9 o'clock in the morning to get your lunch. And so it became pretty tiresome. And we decided to, well, I did anyway, to try to do without the food, which was pretty awful anyway.
Peck and his fellow band members stayed in musical shape by giving small combo concerts all over the ship. He says they initially had no concerns about going overseas.
Well, you know, musicians never get that excited. And nobody was nervous because we didn't realize what was going on over in England. And it only came to our attention when we got off the boat and got into a train and headed for London. And when we got off that train, we were greeted by the first V-bombs. And, of course, this made us a little worried.
Miller went to work immediately to get the band moved out of London and succeeded, just in time, as it turned out, for the day after they left, the building they'd been quartered in was hit, killing 27 military policemen who were living there.
He felt guilty about it. He said, well, what did I get you guys into? Because, like us, he was unaware of the fact that the V-bombs were falling. And we ended up in Bedford, which is about 50 miles north of London, and we had our headquarters there. They also provided a recording facility.
The band settled in and went to work, giving, by one estimate, 800 performances during its time in England. Paul Dudley, a technical sergeant in the AAF who wrote and directed its radio shows, later wrote of the reaction he witnessed one night. The American band of the AEF mounted a makeshift stage inside a giant steel hangar. 3,500 men of the 8th Air Force sat on the dirt floor, on the wings of planes, and on the lofty beams overhead, as the opening theme, Moonlight Serenade, pumped the psychological lifeblood of American music back into those youthful, homesick hearts. Captain Miller walked out onto the stage, and an eerie yell of welcome swelled from the audience. A happy cry, yet filled with the weird wildness of a torrential spill of suddenly released frustrations. Colonel Kirby, whose efforts had transported the band to the ETO, stood proudly listening at the far end of the hangar. After the show, Glenn walked straight to him to say, "Colonel, making all the money in the music business could never have made me feel this rich." As the Allies moved across France in the late summer and early autumn of 1944, some thought the war might be over with by Christmas. Here's the Miller Army Air Force Band in England performing a newly penned tribute to the liberation of France.
They say in dear old Gay Paris,
all's well, mademoiselle.
We started out in Normandy, it won't be long till victory.
Hearts will sing that happy day, France will ring with the Marseillaise.
All's well, mademoiselle, soon you will dance again, love and romance again.
Vive la France again, mademoiselle.
The Glenn Miller Army Air Force Band on one of its regular radio programs for American soldiers in England, doing All's Well, Mademoiselle. We're going to hear a rare encounter of two 1940s American icons now, Glenn Miller and Bing Crosby. The two never recorded commercially together. This very lo-fi recording of Crosby joining the AAF for a concert in England emerged decades later in the 1980s. Nat Peck remembers Crosby's arrival that day.
In with a tray full of Scotch whiskey and so on, and Glenn absolutely forbade us to drink before the concert, before the program, which we did, but we had a lovely party afterwards, and he was a terrific man, really wonderful personality, and we enjoyed working with him.
Tonight we're forgetting the idea of saving the best for the last by moving the main attraction up to the two spot. Nothing I could say could top the feeling you Tommies and Yanks have already expressed toward this guy. So I'm just going to lay it on the line, short and sweet. Here's Bing Crosby.
It's certainly high honor, Major Glenn Miller, sharing this all-Allied audience and the music of your all-American band. You know, if I were making tanks or aeroplanes or something like that, I'd be a lot closer to understanding why you guys out there might be wanting anything that I have to offer. I'm just hoping that your demand lasts as long as my supply. So whatever I got to sell ain't going to get any closer to a deal if I don't taste the conversation here and swing into a slight sonata. Shall we say something that could be doing big business around the rumble seat circuit if you Yanks were back there to take up with your summer night spy, Major?
Down my spine, the last laugh is mine, a dream not denied me. Just one look and then I knew that all I longed for lost over
fancy, Mr. Crosby, as usual. Your voice is what the well-dressed song should be wearing, and I mean any season.
Bing Crosby performing Long Ago and Far Away with the Glenn Miller Army Air Force Orchestra in England on August 31, 1944. The size of his orchestra gave Miller the chance to make most of his listeners happy in one way or another with the easy-listening Strings with Wings ensemble, the Swing Shift Big Band, singer Johnny Desmond and the Crew Chiefs vocal group, and more. He maintained his musical authority over the various components of the AAF, but he did give free rein to one musician, the young pianist and arranger Mel Powell, who led the AAF's Uptown Hall Gang, a small modernistic group that included clarinetist Peanuts Hucko and Nat Peck on trombone.
Miller came around for the first day, and he virtually wrote the theme song with Mel there and then. And My Guys Come Home, I think is the name of it. After that, we never saw him. And the instruction that Miller may have left with him was, do whatever you want. And he did.
The Uptown Hall Gang was Miller's nod to those seeking a hipper form of jazz. It included among its repertoire a song that was barely known yet to the general public, Dizzy Gillespie's bebop anthem, A Night in Tunisia. Yes, that's right. A component of the Glenn Miller Orchestra was performing A Night in Tunisia in 1944. Not even Dizzy Gillespie or Charlie Parker had recorded it yet.
Junior Collins, a French horn player, was a great enthusiast for bebop and the new music in Dizzy Gillespie. Somehow he was asked to write an arrangement on one of those tunes, which happened to be A Night in Tunisia. And it was not easy to play.
Thank you.
The Uptown Hall Gang doing Dizzy Gillespie's bebop anthem Night in Tunisia. As the Allies' war progress continued in the autumn of 1944, Glenn Miller was already making post-war plans. The October 1st, 1944 issue of Downbeat reported that Miller was definitely set for movie work and performances at New York City's Paramount Theater when he returned. It also stated that his new civilian orchestra would be modeled after the Army Air Force Band and that he would play select concerts in key cities instead of touring constantly. Michael McGurr thinks that Miller would have found that a tough road to hoe.
It's difficult to imagine what kind of musical terrain Glenn Miller would have found after World War II back in the United States. Most of the big bands were collapsing. It's hard to imagine that Miller would have been able to maintain this enormous moving variety act that his AAF band had become. And you tend to think that, like Paul Whiteman, he would have had a great deal of difficulty and probably would have had to do something very different.
In the meantime, the band kept up a grueling schedule. Nat Peck recalls that the pace picked up as the year wound down to a close. Miller wanted to take the band across the channel to France, where they could play for soldiers fighting on the front lines.
We did work hard, I'll tell you, especially when we were trying to go overseas and the BBC wouldn't let us go overseas until we had finished our commitment with the BBC, which meant recording a ton of programs, all one after the other. And, I mean, you know, if I were going to be paid for the work I did during the war with the Glenn Miller Band, I could have retired immediately after the war.
Among the recordings the Miller Band made were propaganda sides waxed at Abbey Road, the studio that would famously play host to the Beatles 2 decades later.
Nun, Herr Major Miller, was darf ich jetzt ankündigen?
The Volga Boatman, that well-known Russian song in our own version. And we play it as a tribute to our fighting Russian allies.
It's sort of hilarious to listen to those broadcasts of the Wehrmacht Hour, as it was called, this hour devoted to the soldiers of the German army, in which Miller plays his standard repertoire. By and large, sometimes the lyrics are sung in German, and sometimes Miller himself speaks in German. But none of it is the kind of propaganda that the Germans themselves practiced. You know, they had their own radio broadcast, Charlie and His Orchestra, which so often are about how, American soldiers are being betrayed back at home, and meanwhile, it's all for the sake of blacks and the Jews. And here's Glenn Miller just doing exactly for a German audience what he does for an American audience. And again, it makes the propaganda palatable and smooth.
Oh, Herr Major Miller, es ist doch wirklich wunderbar, dass es für einen amerikanischen Musiker kein Verboten und keine Einschränkungen gibt. Er spielt die Musik, die will, die Musik, die seinen Hörern gefällt. Gleichgültig ist, ob es amerikanische, deutsche, russische, chinesische oder jüdische Musik ist.
Ich verstehe Sie. America means freedom, and there's no expression of freedom quite so sincere as music.
Nat Peck remembers the Abbey Road recordings featuring Ilse, the German-speaking propagandist, with bemusement. But the sadder consequences of the war were all around him and his bandmates. He recalls one such encounter.
Mostly, we went went to airfields and gave concerts to the flyers and their associates. And one of them, I remember, was in a hospital where everybody was wounded and dying. And then we were trying to brighten things up with renditions of In the Mood, which I felt was very strange. And we didn't get much of a reaction from the poor audience. They were all doomed.
Hello there, folks. Welcome to another program of Strings with Wings. Radio, you know, is a sort of funny thing. You get up here in front of the microphone, play some tunes, and never know whether there's anybody listening or not. But we kind of figure there must be, because the kind of music we put out is just what we think you guys and gals like around this time of an evening. It's violin music played soft and slow. And whether you're out there or not, here we go. The first tune, Spring Will Be a Little Late This Year.
The Strings with Wings unit of the Miller Army Air Force Orchestra performing Spring Will Be a Little Late This Year, a brand new song at that point, recorded in Bedford, England on November 25, 1944, as the Miller Band worked at a furious pace to fulfill its obligations before crossing the Channel to France. December 15, 1944. The new issue of Downbeat that carried that date featured stories about the Glenn Miller and Sam Donahue bands holding a wartime reunion in England, and Princess Antoinette of Monaco dancing with a GI to Glenn Miller records smuggled in from Switzerland. Miller himself that day was hitching a ride to Paris on a small airplane, eager to get to France and prepare for the full Army Air Force Orchestra to follow him and start playing for the soldiers fighting on the front lines. The weather that day was terrible for flying. Planes everywhere were grounded. That afternoon, Miller boarded a single-engine Norseman plane with a fellow officer and a pilot and took off for France, heading out over the English Channel. The plane was never seen again, and when the band arrived in Paris several days later, Miller was not at the airfield to greet them.
That was the first clue, because normally Miller would have been there supplying transportation and so on. And there we were, waiting around in the cold and the wet, and then it was raining. And we had very little shelter, and nobody knew what was going on. Finally, Don Haynes showed up and made a few inquiries, and he organized the transportation back to the hotel. We all thought that it was one of Glenn Miller's adventures he was having at our expense, and it wasn't the case. He never made it, and we were all very despondent about that.
Not only was Glenn Miller nowhere to be found, the German army had launched its last-ditch effort to turn the tide of the war in France, and its initial success put Paris in danger of falling again. The AAF musicians were told they might need to take up arms, and winter in the wartime City of Lights had other disadvantages as well.
I remember at the Hotel des Olympiades that we stayed at, all of us had nice rooms. And the only problem was they were not heated, because the proprietor of the hotel took our allocation of coal and sold it on the black market. Well, I never got undressed. It was so cold. I went to bed in full uniform.
Though the Germans were ultimately turned back without rifles having to be pressed into the hands of AAF musicians, the mystery of Glenn Miller's disappearance continued to reverberate throughout the orchestra.
It came as a terrific shock to all of us. What's going to happen now? And we thought that it meant the breakup of the band.
We take you to hear a recording made earlier this Christmas Day at an Allied troop theater in Paris. There, before an audience composed of members of the Allied Expeditionary Forces, was the American band of the AEF, conducted by Sergeant Jerry Gray, substituting for Major Glenn Miller. Come in, American band of the AEF.
On Christmas Day 1944, the Army Air Force Band joined the Canadian and British military bands and played for a shortwave radio broadcast from Paris that was relayed by the BBC to American audiences. It was the first time the orchestra had been heard stateside performing from Europe, and it followed by just a few hours the first official reports to the world that Major Glenn Miller had gone missing. Nat Peck was playing with the AAF that Christmas Day in Paris, 1944.
Carried on like real troopers, in the full knowledge that we probably would never see Miller again, although that was not yet definite. They never gave up looking for various possibilities of his turning up somewhere. And so it was a half and half sort of a situation where we were very sad about his disappearance, but on the other hand, very hopeful that it was not the last word that he would show up, and we'd carry on just as we had in the past. It didn't happen that way, but we hoped it would.
And now the Allied Expeditionary Forces program invites listeners in the AEF and listeners at home in the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom to join our combined orchestras and sing us on our way.
WOR, in connection with the British Broadcasting Corporation, has presented from England and France on this Christmas Day the Canadian band with the AEF, the third British band with the AEF, and the American band with the AEF, led by Sergeant Jerry Gray, but which is ordinarily conducted by Major Glenn Miller, who has been reported within the past 24 hours as missing. This was a special program of the type of entertainment that our fighting men are now seeing this wartime Christmas in the field.
Major Glenn Miller was one of nearly 300,000 Americans who lost their lives in the conflagration of World War II. The Miller AAF band would stay together after Miller's disappearance, playing for the next 7 months across the continent as the Allies liberated Europe. Because almost all of the recordings they made were radio transcriptions, the music of the AAF went unheard for many years after its wartime broadcast ended. And even today, when much of it has been issued on CD, it remains not nearly as well known as the music of the Miller civilian band that preceded it. Most critics think it was a musically superior band to the civilian orchestra. And jazz educator Janice Stockhouse says the influence of Miller's Army Air Force Band does endure.
That group became the Airmen of Note, which is regarded as the finest current military band here in our country. So he built this legacy that has existed long after his passing.
Glenn Miller left another legacy as well, the sustained morale of a generation of men and women who lived through World War II with his music as a soundtrack. The war separated many temporarily, and many forever. People flung across the planet, young and in the face of loneliness, boredom, fear, and grief, undertaking, in one way or another, the terrible enterprise of conflict. In such times, they could turn to music and hope, for just a little while, that home and happiness were somewhere in their future.
Good night, wherever you are.
May your dreams be pleasant dreams wherever you are.
If only one little wish that I wish comes true, I know that the angels will watch over you.
Watch over you, dear. Good night, wherever you are.
I'll be with you, dear, no matter how near or far.
Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Special thanks to Nat Peck, Michael McGurr, Janice Stockhouse, and Brent Wallerab. You can listen to this and previous Nightlights broadcasts on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington, Indiana, or online at landlockedmusic.com. And from the Laughing Planet Cafe, the Laughing Planet Cafe, online at thelaughingplanetcafe.com. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.